Good evening, and thank you for joining E*TRADE's fourth quarter and full year 2017 earnings conference call. Joining the call today are Chief Executive Officer Carl Rossner and Chief Financial Officer Michael Pizzi. Today's call may include forward-looking statements, including statements about E*TRADE's proposed transaction with Capital One Financial Corporation and its benefits and timing, as well as the company's future operational and financial performance, which reflect management's current estimates or beliefs and are subject to risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to differ materially. During the call, the company will also discuss non-GAAP financial measures. For a reconciliation of such non-GAAP measures to the comparable GAAP figures and for a discussion of additional risks and uncertainties that may affect the future results of E*TRADE Financial, please refer to the company's earnings release furnished on Form 8K, along with Form 10Ks, 10Qs, and other documents the company has filed with the SEC. All of these documents are also available at about.etrade.com. Note that the company has not reconciled its forward-looking non-GAAP measures, including non-GAAP adjusted operating margin, to the most directly comparable GAAP measures, because material items that impact that measure are out of the company's control and cannot be reasonably predicted. This call will present information as of January 25, 2018. The company disclaims any duty to update forward-looking statements made during the call. This call is being recorded, and a replay will be available via phone and webcast later this evening at about.etrade.com. No other recordings or copies of this call are authorized or may be relied upon. With that, I will now turn the call over to Mr. Rossner.
Thank you, Ash. Good evening, and thank you for joining us for our fourth quarter and full year results call. It's a pleasure to speak with you as we reflect on an exceptional year. In 2017, we had our work cut out for us, and I couldn't be more proud of our team as we completed our to-do list while continuing to deliver for our customers against the backdrop of extreme competition and an unprecedented market environment. So without further ado, I'll get right to the recap of our successes during the year. We delivered on our core initiatives, reinvigorating our brand with a bold new marketing campaign, completing the integration of Options House, and delivering meaningful enhancements to the customer experience. We made solid progress against our brokerage growth targets, setting a multitude of firm records across DARTs, derivatives mix, brokerage assets, managed products, and customer margin balances. We turbocharged our growth efforts at E*TRADE Corporate Services, implementing nearly $6 billion in new client plans during the year and growing our pipeline to include $14 billion in plan assets that we expect to implement over the next 12 months. We efficiently deployed capital, onboarding deposits and growing our balance sheet by more than $14 billion, while launching and completing more than a third of our $1 billion share buyback program. We further optimized our capital structure, following the mid-year reduction of our consolidated Tier 1 leverage threshold, which left us with more than $500 million of excess capital. Today, we are announcing a similar reduction in our bank Tier 1 leverage thresholds by 50 basis points to 7%. That leaves us with nearly $270 million of excess capital based on year-end levels at the bank. We improved our corporate debt profile, capitalizing on our own improvements and attractive capital market conditions to refinance our corporate debt in our first ever deal as an investment-grade issuer, reducing the average coupon from a 5-handle to a 3-handle. We improved our strategic positioning, announcing the planned acquisition of a top-notch RIA custody platform, prudently entering a growing market while also filling an important need within our corporate services channel. And finally, we delivered impressive operating and financial results, growing annual revenue by 22% to $2.4 billion, fueled by record-setting brokerage activity and our balance sheet expansion. We also exhibited disciplined expense control as we expanded our adjusted operating margin by 480 basis points over the same period. When considering just Q4, revenue was up 25% and adjusted op margin was up by more than 600 basis points over the year-ago period. Truly remarkable in light of the commission cuts earlier in the year. So to sum up 2017, it was an awesome year. And to kick off the new year, we are pleased to announce today an agreement to purchase over 1 million retail brokerage accounts from Capital One for $170 million. Opportunities like this, in which we can efficiently add a large number of customers to our highly scalable platform, do not come along often. So with Cap One's decision to exit the business, we are more than happy to seize it. This is a financially compelling purchase, as Mike will cover with you shortly, with a price well below our typical customer acquisition costs for a broad set of customers that meet our target profile. Moreover, this deal materially expands our U.S. household penetration, and we revel in the opportunity to meaningfully deepen their engagement as we introduce them to what E-Trade has to offer: a broader product suite, a greater service experience, and significantly expanded resources, education, tools, and functionality across our suite of offerings. We expect this deal to close by the third quarter. Turning back to our operating metrics, we saw an impressive resurgence in customer engagement in 2017, and it only intensified in the fourth quarter. The upward trend in the equity markets through multiple all-time highs propelled trading activity, driving DARTs for the year of 214,000, an annual record, and up 30% from 2016. For the fourth quarter, our DARTs of 236,000 were the highest ever, with monthly DARTs in both November and December ranking among the top 3 months in E-Trade's recorded history. And while the ebb and flow of retail trading is bound to deflate these metrics at some point, we have yet to see any signs of slowing from fourth quarter levels, with January month-to-date DARTs tracking around 315,000, roughly a 30% increase from December. Customer margin balances ended the year at $9.1 billion, also a firm record, though we have seen them come in a bit in January. 2017 was a year of marked progress across each of our key growth metrics, so to briefly cover where we stand on each. For the year, we attracted 172,000 net new brokerage accounts, representing the most accounts we've added organically in over a decade, and a 5% growth rate, squarely within our targeted range. Net new brokerage assets of $12.2 billion in 2017 makes for our strongest year of net inflows ever. With a great many initiatives rolled out over the course of the year to drive our growth on this front, we are overwhelmingly pleased with the result, but are even more encouraged by what 2018 will bring as we enter the year firing on all cylinders. Our derivative mix for the year was 30%, up from 26% in 2016, which included Options House for the last few months of the year. In the fourth quarter, our derivatives mix declined to 29% from 32% in the prior quarter, as the recent surge in equity trading swamped the effect of our pronounced and continued growth in derivative volumes. The rollout of additional derivative tools and capabilities to the E-Trade customer base, a ramp up in our futures product offering, and concerted marketing and education efforts should help enrich our derivatives mix as we work towards our goal of 35%. However, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that in this truly phenomenal year, our absolute level of derivatives trades is up 30% year over year. Managed assets have grown to $5.4 billion, up nearly 40% for the year, with the vast majority of that growth coming from net inflows. Given our success to date, we are well on our way to exceeding our goal of $6 billion in managed balances. In the fourth quarter alone, a refocused sales effort and refinements to the product set led to a pickup in the pace of net inflows, which accounted for nearly 80% of the sequential growth in the quarter. As for our corporate services channel, in 2017, we implemented nearly $6 billion in stock plan assets across more than 48,000 plan participants, a 25% increase from the prior year. Last quarter, we discussed $8 billion of planned assets in the pipeline to be implemented. Today, that number stands at $14 billion across more than 135,000 accounts that we expect to bring onto our award-winning platform over the next 12 months. I'll speak more about this channel in a moment. And so, with 2017 behind us, and with those many accomplishments, we will once again raise the bar and outline what we seek to achieve in 2018. And if these areas of focus seem familiar, they should. Frankly, we have a simple yet powerful strategy upon which we will continue to execute intensely. First, we will continue to up our game for the active trader segment, focusing on our derivatives traders. Last year, we enjoyed significant success with the integration of Options House and the launch of the new Power E-Trade model, but that's just the beginning, as we're now busy making this integrating offering the best it can be, not just through further enriching the capabilities of our number one platform, but through the personal service, education, and resources we offer for active traders. Our second area of focus comes from the other side of the house, our investing offering. We very recently reimagined and aligned our investment advice continuum to more clearly show customers and prospects how we can best serve them, from our basic robo to our fully customized portfolio offerings, all as a part of one cohesive investing spectrum. This important work serves as the bedrock of our sales and marketing efforts for 2018 in the investing space. We are not all things to all people, but for those investors looking to take some control over their finances, no matter how large or small a role they want to play, we are the place for them. Our third area of focus is our corporate services business, in which we aim to continue to build our large stable of corporate clients and our overall participant base and further enhance our offering for both sets of customers. With the leading technology platform in Equity Edge Online, along with superior service and a number one ranking in customer satisfaction and loyalty, our corporate services channel is already well positioned to win RFP battles, and the value proposition is only getting better. Remaining true to our heritage, we are continuing to install digital solutions to solve cross-industry headaches. Stock plan administration has traditionally been an analog business, and we set ourselves apart by using the E-Trade ethos to evolve the space into a digital environment backed by the best stock plan expertise around. Expect us to continue to be a leader in this space and to bring additional corporate clients on board in 2018. On the stock plan participant side, an important account and asset growth area for us, we are in the midst of expanding the products we offer with resources like securities-based lending, access to our revamped investing advice continuum post-vest, and most exciting, in the coming year, we plan to provide an avenue for high net worth and executive participants to access independent advisors through TCA, filling a long-standing gap in our offering. TCA is the fourth area of focus, and we are more than a little bit excited to put our resources behind this business to help turbocharge their growth. We will deploy the full power of the E-Trade brand behind their platform, and as I mentioned, we will develop a referral program for certain RIAs on the TCA platform to position their offering to those corporate services clients and our current and prospective retail brokerage clients in need of that level of service. TCA has an exceptional platform and a fantastic team. When combined with E-Trade, we think there is a lot to like in the RIA space. And last but not least is our primary mission, delighting our customers. We will continue to focus on the customer experience to deliver fantastic interactions across all touch points. More than anything, this is about making E-Trade exceptionally easy to do business with. And you've heard us speak time and again about the process by which we continually improve the experience for our customers. Make no mistake, this effort will continue in earnest in 2018 and beyond. With these five areas of focus, we also know we must get the word out. To this end, our marketing team has been hard at work. Last year was about reinvigorating the brand. This year, we will further evolve and drive our Power E-Trade campaign, especially in light of last year's success. We will put more of E-Trade's muscle behind our investing and retirement offerings, including making a big splash on the national stage. We will continue to focus on talking to the E-Trade value proposition, and we will put our brand behind the TCA offering to help drive growth in that business and further diversify our revenues. So bottom line, we have much to accomplish in 2018 and a great many tasks on our new list. But if past is prologue, 2018 stands to be another incredible year for E-Trade. Before closing, let me briefly comment on the recently passed tax law, which will significantly lower our effective tax rate and improve our rate of capital generation beginning in 2018. Mike will go into the details on the direct impact to our financials, but I wanted to address a recurring question from our investors. How will it affect how E-Trade operates? The short answer is not much, but for the significant improvement to our bottom line results. We'll always be focused on ensuring we're competitive in the marketplace while investing as needed in our people, our technology, and any new business opportunities that may create value for our shareholders. And as we continue to invest in growing our business, this lower rate does expand our options as the payback equation improves and more opportunities may meet our internal return hurdles. That said, we will continue to exercise disciplined expense control, and any investments will be made within our operating margin framework. Barring dramatic shifts in competition, We see this tax reform as universally positive for our shareholders, as the benefit will be passed directly to the bottom line. To wrap up, 2017 was a banner year at E-Trade with a long list of achievements, and we have worked tirelessly to deliver all of them. And while the E-Trade model is optimally geared for the current environment, with the systems and service offering that flex considerably to manage surges in customer activity, and a balance sheet and capital position that enable us to maximize the value of customer relationships, it's important to recognize that without the dedication, focus, and everyday hard work of this team, we would not have been able to fully take advantage of the opportunity. So above all, I owe a debt of gratitude to the folks that have not only raised their games to meet the market need, but have done so while setting us up for future growth. Now it's with great anticipation and renewed energy that we look forward to 2018, a year of intensified execution and delivery to continue driving toward our goal of becoming the number one broker and advisor to both traders and investors alike. With that, I will turn it over to our CFO, Mike Pizzi.
Thanks, Carl. For the quarter, we reported net income of $129 million, or 48 cents per share, which includes a handful of notable items that had the net impact of reducing results by $44 million, or 16 cents per share. To review, first, we recorded an additional income tax expense of $58 million due to the revaluation of our federal net deferred tax assets as a result of tax reform. Second, there was a $26 million provision benefit in the quarter as we ended the period with an allowance for loan losses of $74 million, and we recorded net recoveries for the eighth consecutive quarter. And third, we incurred $3 million in expense related to crossing the $50 billion regulatory threshold. Net revenues of $637 million were up $38 million from the prior quarter, driven by continued growth in the balance sheet, a higher net interest margin, and increased customer engagement overall. Net interest income increased $28 million to $419 million during the quarter as average interest earning assets grew by $2.5 billion and net interest margin expanded 7 basis points to 292 basis points. Stronger securities lending revenue, our debt refi, better securities yields, and higher average margin balances were the most impactful drivers of the sequential NIM expansion. Our average reinvestment rate on securities is currently in the 250 to 270 basis point range. In terms of forecasting 2018 NIM, if we hold customer margin balances flat with their current levels, which as Carl noted are down from year end, and assume no Fed funds increases during the year, we expect NIM to land in the low to mid 280s. However, if we project a Fed funds increase in March, as the market broadly assumes, and model some level of deposit repricing, we forecast NIM in the mid to high 280s. I'll cover ongoing balance sheet growth dynamics in a moment. Commission revenue of $109 million increased 9% sequentially, driven by a 15% increase in DARTs to 236,000, partially offset by a 35-cent decline in our average commission per trade, which was $7.41 for the quarter. Both the volume and rate reflect the significant recent upturn in equity trading, which has had a dilutive effect on our derivative mix. We are also witnessing strong adoption of our Power E-Trade offering and had more customers meeting the activity threshold to qualify for our lower pricing tier. We are quite pleased with the increase in customer engagement and with our progress on the derivatives front, despite the dilution to commission per trade. Going forward, we expect our CPT to be in the 740 to 760 range, with the lower end more likely when equity trading volumes are elevated, like they were in Q4. Fees and service charges increased $1 million to $93 million in the quarter as trading volumes drove higher order flow revenue and managed product balances drove an increase in asset-based fees. This was partially offset by a decline in reorg fees and lower off-balance sheet cash revenue as we onboarded an additional $1.2 billion in deposits during the quarter. The yield on third-party customer cash averaged 123 basis points, up from 119 basis points in the prior quarter, reflecting movements in short-term rates. With the December rate hike, we expect this yield to rise to approximately 136 basis points when the full benefit is reflected during Q1. Non-interest expense was $364 million, up $17 million from the prior quarter, excluding the $58 million charge for extinguishment of debt in the third quarter. This quarter's adjusted operating margin, which excludes provision benefit, was 43%, an improvement from the prior quarter of nearly 100 basis points. Total marketing expense of $43 million came in slightly below the low end of the $45 to $50 million range we provided last quarter as we shifted the timing of planned investments into Q1. Looking on to 2018 and consistent with our commitments from last quarter, given the December Fed hike, we are targeting a full-year adjusted operating margin of 43%. This assumes no additional rate hikes and incorporates our plans to increase investments in the business over the course of the year, including a ramp-up in marketing spend to a total of around $200 million for the year and some level of deposit repricing. If the Fed were to raise rates in March, as is widely anticipated, depending on the timing and magnitude of any deposit repricing, we'd expect the full-year margin to range from 43.5% to 44.5%. On the capital front, it was a busy quarter indeed. First, in early December, we issued $300 million of preferred stock to fund the pending acquisition of TCA. Given the attractiveness of the preferred market at the time, we decided to go early and came away very satisfied with pricing at a 5.3% coupon on the transaction. Second, as Carl discussed, we have lowered our Tier 1 leverage ratio threshold at the bank by 50 basis points to 7%. And finally, during the fourth quarter, we repurchased 3.9 million shares at an average price of $44.97, or $175 million in total. As of today, we have just under $640 million remaining, and we are on track to complete the $1 billion program by the end of 2018. As for today's announced acquisition of over 1 million retail brokerage accounts from Capital One, we expect the transaction to close by the third quarter and plan to fund the purchase with corporate cash on hand. With this transaction, we will bring approximately $1.7 billion in cash and $150 million in margin loans onto the balance sheet. The economics are highly compelling, with a return on invested capital in the mid to high teens, an accretion that is neutral to 2018 earnings and about 6 cents positive to 2019, based on a conservative business assumptions and including all deal-related costs in the first half of the year. With respect to balance sheet growth, a major initiative in 2017 was onboarding of the off-balance sheet deposits to bring our balance sheet to a target of $63 billion by year-end, which we have successfully completed. As we have noted in the past, we will maintain some level of customer deposits off-balance sheet to maximize insurance coverage for our customers. Today, that equates to roughly $3 billion. So we are modestly above that level with over $5.5 billion of cash off-balance sheet at year-end. Going forward, we would expect our balance sheet to be influenced by the following factors. First, additional deposits we plan to onboard during the year, including $1.6 billion of off-balance sheet sweep in Q1, $1.2 billion of TCA customer cash to be brought on at the close of the deal expected in Q2, and $1.7 billion of customer cash and approximately $150 million of customer margin loans from the account acquisition we announced today. Second, growth in the core brokerage business that includes deposit growth, which is affected by inflows from new and existing customers, customer buying and selling activity, and margin balances. Third, any economic decisions we may make around directing that growth on or off balance sheet based on the shape of the curve. Today, the economics overwhelmingly favor growing the balance sheet. And fourth, the lower capital threshold at the bank starting in Q1, which gives us additional capacity to add assets barring any other attractive uses of capital. As for corporate cash, we ended the quarter at $541 million, up $232 million sequentially, reflecting the $300 million in gross proceeds from the preferred issuance and $175 million in share repurchases during the quarter. In addition, there was a $125 million distribution from the broker-dealer that was partially offset by a $50 million capital infusion to the bank to address some of the immediate impact from the DTA write-down and funding needed for the TCA acquisition. For the first quarter of 2018, we expect the distribution from the broker-dealer to be $125 million. Our effective tax rate in the fourth quarter was 37%, excluding the impact of tax reform. While this tax reform reduced the statutory corporate income tax rate by 14 percentage points to the new 21% rate, this law includes other provisions that impact our future overall effective tax rate. The two most important are banks with total assets of over $50 billion may no longer deduct FDIC insurance premiums, and the deductibility of certain executive compensation over $1 million has been eliminated. While we continue to expect quarterly volatility due to the impact of share-based compensation awards and future revaluations of our state deferred tax assets, we currently expect a full-year 2018 tax rate to be approximately 27%. As Carl mentioned, after continuing to invest in the business, we plan to pass the vast majority of the savings to our shareholders by way of direct bottom-line benefit. In closing, we are very satisfied with 2017's blockbuster results and look forward to continuing to deliver value for our customers and shareholders.
Ash, with that, we'd like to open up for questions, please.
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. One moment, please, for the first question. Our first question comes from the line of Rich Repetto with Sandler O'Neill. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, Kyle. Good evening, Mike.
Hi, Rich.
I guess, good evening. I guess the first question is on Cap One, and I think we know the background a little bit. It was the old share builder, and they well, the low trading activity of the accounts, I'm only coming up with 4 trades per account per year. So I guess I'm trying to get to where you're seeing, I guess, the accretion. I guess it's from the cash. But could you go into how you're going to incorporate it, given a different business model with ShareBuilder and the low trading activity? But, I get the cash side of it.
Yeah, we see, Rich, about 16,000 darts from the account. So you are right. They're lower active than our account base. They don't have the percentage of active traders that we have. But we're very excited by the potential that's within the account base and for us to engage with them on our platform. In terms of getting to the accretion, you have to look at the $1.9 billion in brokerage-related cash, $1.7 billion of which is available sweep cash to be brought onto the balance sheet. Those are the key drivers of that, really, in terms of looking at with these accounts, and this is an account purchase. So we're taking these accounts and then modeling any expenses that we will drive on our platform against it is what gets you to the accretion.
Yeah, and Rich, looking at the number of households that support these accounts and the marketing efforts that we have, when you couple that with our offerings, our education, our tools and platform, this is something that we think is a home run for us in terms of new account acquisition and furthering and deepening the relationships that the Cap One, and the predecessor had with these customers. These are individuals who did interact or do interact with their finances. And that's a perfect target customer for us in addition to sort of the rest of the deal. So to me, it's a win-win.
Okay. And then the one follow-up would be on the TCA acquisition. You know, originally it was $50 million in trailing 12-month revenue, and then going out to, I believe in 2019, $80 million. Given the appreciation of the market, much higher than what we've seen in the back half of 2017 and January. Any update on, the accretion targets for TCA or what's going on there?
I mean, look, Rich, we haven't brought that one on board yet. And obviously we'll continue to work through the integration and we'll have more information as that one becomes available. We like what we see with this business, right? I've been out with them. I've seen the platform. I've been out to go meet the top 6 or 7 RIAs by size, who are on their platform, and I really like what I see from the offering, from the individuals I went to go meet these folks with, and from the compliments we received from the RIAs who are on the platform themselves. So it's, for us, it's a very solid acquisition. I think more to come, and we absolutely see upside here.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Our next question comes from the line of Steven Schuback with Nomura Instinet. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. So wanted to start off with a question on the NIM. In your earnings walk slide, you show the benefit of a parallel shift. And thinking back to your guidance from a few years ago when the slide was first introduced, you spoke to a normalized spread of around 300 bips. Mike, I know you talked about some of the dynamics around how that might traject in the coming year, but just given the composition of your balance sheet today and based on the forward curve, which has about 3+ rate hikes, at least in the coming years, and the Fed dot plot reflects something similar, I'm just wondering, in the event of multiple rate hikes, how we should be thinking about a reasonable normalized NIM target. What should we be contemplating there?
Well, we're bringing on securities balances in that 250 to 270 basis point range, and we're investing in the belly of the curve, and those rates have been increasing over time with the Fed. The curve is flattening, but you're getting, you know, for 25 basis points Fed moves, you are seeing some increase in our overall investment rate. You know, as the balance sheet grows, you know, we were at 292 this quarter, right? As the balance sheet's growing, we're growing slightly, you know, below that overall spread level. But if we see three interest rate hikes, you know, the shape of the curve will matter greatly. But as that reinvestment yield gets applied, you will see higher overall spread. If we continue to see higher rates in where we are investing our money relative to those Fed moves.
Got it. And then just one more for me on capital management. Just given the significant windfall that you guys spoke to from the lower tax rate, even when taking into consideration the additional capital that's required to support the bank growth, as well as the completion of the $1 billion buyback, it looks like your ratios are still going to run well in excess of that 6.5% target. And I'm just wondering how you're thinking about your capital management priorities. We did see the deal that was announced today, but I'm wondering whether you have any appetite to actually accelerate the buyback plan.
Well, we have two deals that are going to close now. So we have to be, you know, a little bit flexible around timing to make sure that, you know, we have the right capital position when they close. But we are committed to seeing through in 2018 the overall level of buybacks to the $1 billion level. You're right, from the tax, the tax really doesn't greatly affect 2018's capital position. There was a movement down in capital from the revaluation that occurred this quarter. But as we look forward, we were, you know, essentially accreting capital at a pre-tax rate as we earned out the DTA. But when we look in the out years, in 2019, you know, going forward, you start to see a significant build in capital from the tax cut, simply because of just the lower absolute cash taxes that have to be modeled for those years once we get past the usage of the DTA.
Got it. Thanks, Mike. Very helpful. And congrats on the deal.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Dan Fannon with Jefferies. Your line is open. Please go ahead. Dan Fannon, your line is now open. You may have us muted. Once again, Dan Fannon, your line is now open. You may proceed with your question. We'll move on to the next question, which comes from the line of Michael Carrier with the Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
All right, thanks, guys. I guess just a question on the corporate services. You know, given some of the momentum that you're seeing there, if I look at that backlog or the $14 billion, you know, that you noted, just how should we be thinking about, you know, as that comes on, like the potential economics? And in that, you know, business, just from a competitive standpoint, you know, how are you winning, you know, those assets and accounts? I mean, is it competitive on pricing? Is it some of the new initiatives that you guys have put in place? Just want to try to understand sort of the growth potential, you know, not only in the assets but the economics.
And Michael, thank you. I love talking about this business. So it's thanks for the question. The corporate services business has always been, you know, a gem of ours at E-Trade in terms of what we're able to provide in our Equity Edge Online platform and the services that we're able to provide for some of the largest corporations out there in terms of stock plan and equity, you know, plan administration. So when we walk in, we do compete with a number of larger competitors than ourselves, and when we do win them, it's based on the platform itself, based on our sales and service organization, and based on our team's ability to be extremely nimble and make the changes that are necessary, right? Because people, when they deal with their stock plan, they want ease of use. They want their plan participants to be able to see what the company wants them to see, not necessarily what the vendor wants them to see. And there's a lot of customization and a lot of requests that come across. Our guys have been very good at getting things done for our corporate customers. So when we win, it's based on the, you know, the Equity Edge Online platform itself, which has been number one for, you know, 5-6 years running now, as well as the team of individuals who go in, and then the implementation team who comes back and services and makes sure those folks get onboarded right and are there to, you know, to sort of clean up and make sure the customers are satisfied and happy with the offering. And it's also a give and take and a constant back and forth with the corporate client to continue to upgrade, update, and be there to really handhold, you know, as they implement and they make changes to their own corporate stock plans. So that's been, you know, very, very helpful for us, and, you know, coming in the market dislocation as we have with a number of larger competitors switching over their systems, it's absolutely been a perfect storm for our team, you know, based down in Alpharetta and then obviously on the West Coast. And they've done a great job landing some, you know, some very large corporate clients. You've seen that grow from, you know, $8 billion over the next 12 months to $14 billion. They've been winning some very nice accounts, you know, from some of our competitors, and we're seeing what we talked about, you know, come to fruition. So when I look at how to look at that $14 billion, that's where you have to get into how do we as a company start servicing that $14 billion in assets that comes into stock plan participants' accounts better than we have in the past. Right? Traditionally, we've said as it hits the accounts, we hold somewhere in the 15% range a year later after it vests and is actually in the equity account, so in the E-Trade brokerage account for those folks. How do we raise that number? How do we raise that bar? And that's some of the things I talked about in our prepared remarks. Right? We have an executive services team that we believe we've now armed with the right tools to really help those individuals deal with their finances, all the way from our basic robo to our managed products in the investing advice continuum to, you know, helping them learn about how to employ derivative strategies or option strategies. Or the next step will be to implement, you know, with TCA, if they're looking for an RIA, we can have a few of those on the platform to recommend out so we keep custody of the assets and the cash that's held in the account. And then there's the securities-based lending product that we rolled, which we think is perfect for execs and others who are coming to newly found wealth in an exploding stock market who don't want to sell and take a tax hit, right? They can monetize it through E-Trade Bank. So we think we're really in a good position in this space. I can't give you exact numbers or, you know, or lay it out there for you in terms of we expect it to move this much. I just know that we finally have the right team both on the corporate side of the house landing new big clients, and we also have the right team on the executive services side and on the product side to drive at this in a way that we'll finally find out whether or not we can actually do something here.
Okay, thanks. And just as a follow-up, so just on the strategic side, given the TCA, you know, transaction and then these Cap One accounts, is that, you know, anything, like when we look at the level of activity, is there a lot, you know, of like potential, you know, transactions that you're seeing out there? Is it, you know, a shift in strategy? Is it just that the capital, you know, that you have that you can deploy, you know, you're now at a level where you have, you know, more options? Just trying to get a sense sort of strategically, you know, how you guys are focused on growth versus the other strategic options that were discussed, you know, 12, 18 months ago.
No, I'm happy to. So we are still maniacally focused on our growth goals, right? We set those out in the four categories that we've talked about at quite some length, and that's exactly where we intend to be, right? We're driving at those. That's the way our teams have been set up. Those goals and our progress against those goals, we report to you all on a quarterly basis. They hang on our walls in every office at E-Trade, and our whole company is geared toward getting those done. So that's first and foremost. I would go back to actually the first time we talked about, you know, what we were thinking about in acquisition land or in inorganic growth. That's all complementary to where we are. We knew we had a hole in the RIA space in terms of, you know, diversifying some of our revenue streams, and I think we've gone about that in an intelligent and thoughtful way with a custody platform to start, right? We're still not competing with our customers. We're not going out and taking away from our FCs who are, you know, helping our customers on a daily basis. It'll be an additive to have third-party RIAs on the TCA platform. So that was first and foremost. We talked about let's go out and get a custody platform, and we publicly announced that. We also said the next thing that we'd like to do first and foremost is think about scale, right? If there are any other scale opportunities out there to grow scale in a marketplace where, you know, the last big asset traded away, you know, a year ago or so, that we would do that. This Capital One transaction literally, you know, came up. The price was right, and we went after scale. The other two areas that we talked about were stock plan. You know, if there was a scale play there or something additive to our technology, I haven't heard about anything missing in our Equity Edge Online offering, but if there was, you know, we'd look at that as well if it was, if it made sense from a capital perspective. You know, and the other side is just around, you know, additional products or features or services that it might be better to buy versus build. We haven't found any of those yet either, but there's some exciting technology out there. But I take you back to the beginning of that, which is we're not looking at anything transformational. We are not changing the strategic direction of this firm. Our growth goals are first and foremost where we will be and what we're driving toward as we come out of, you know, come into 2018 and out of 2018. The acquisitions are additive, and they will all be looked at through the same capital-intensive lens we've talked about. Right, if we can find value, we're going to do it, and if it makes more sense to return it to our shareholders, that's what we're going to do.
All right, thanks a lot.
Yep.
Our next question comes from the line of Brennan Hawken with UBS. Your line is open. Please proceed.
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking the question. Mike, in your comments, I think you made reference to the potential for deposit repricing if we get another Fed fund hike. Sorry. Can you maybe put a little more color around that? What kind of deposit beta do you think you might expect here in the next hike?
Sure. Just looking at kind of the, with going back to the December hike and our 43% operating margin guidance, we are leaving ourselves some flexibility to be a little bit more tactical on rates, whether that's a, you know, additional negotiated cash rates or whether that's moving our deposit rates. In terms of if the Fed does raise in March, it sets up a pretty wide range, really, in effective operating margin. If we took no action at all, it would put you up very close to that 44.5 level that we talked about in the prepared remarks. And I think you can back into the type of deposit beta to get to the 43.5 type level. It's really consistent, really, with our historical beta if you go back a very long period of time overall.
Okay, got it. That makes sense. And then margin lending growth has been really solid. Could you maybe help us frame out how to think about it from here? And I thought I saw in the average balance sheet that the yield on the margin assets compressed a bit. Given the December hike, I guess I would have assumed the opposite. So was that maybe price cuts for active traders, given some of those efforts there? Or how should we think about that from here? Thanks.
It's not. To answer the last question first, there is an ebb and flow, and as the book builds, it builds in some of the customers who have the negotiated rate. So it's not necessarily more negotiated activity. It's just the increase in balance that you see is customers who have lower rates, you know, larger customers drawing that balance, and that has the effect of showing that sort of shift in the overall margin yield over the period. In terms of thinking about the overall margin balance, you know, the balance is really it's the best indicator of retail risk appetite that there is, and it shows the overall level of engagement of the retail sector. And we, you know, getting to a level of that $9.1 billion in the period, which is you know, a record high for us. You know, the engagement level's high. Customers are active. We're seeing it day in and day out. You know, the margin balance ebbs and flows a little bit. It goes up and down a little bit. But, you know, we're very pleased overall with the levels that we achieved.
And I think, look, as we look at margin and we take a look at what we've spent, you know, money on over the past couple of years in terms of our enterprise risk management system and the real-time, you know, daily monitoring and real-time monitoring that we do in those margin accounts, both to protect our customers and the firm, I think we're in a lot better position in terms of analyzing the margin loans that get put on our books. And we're also, you know, very active in terms of setting margin requirements at the right levels for these securities so that you're not, you know, chasing customers away or giving them a reason to leave you. So you've seen some real shoring up in our enterprise risk management capabilities around this, both in the, you know, on the business side and then in our second line of defense coming back true. So very pleased with where this is. There's really nothing we would ever do or try to do to accelerate this, but it is absolutely investor confidence out there.
Great. Thanks for the color.
Yep.
Our next question comes from the line of Connor Fitzgerald with Goldman Sachs. Your line is open. Please proceed.
Good afternoon. Appreciate the you helping us frame up where the pre-tax margin could go kind of based on what happens with the Fed. But, Carl, maybe a broader question for you, just given some of the potential revenue drivers you could have at your back this year, whether it's either hikes or if we see you know, this type of sustained retail activity, that would obviously be very helpful as well. But if it turns out to be, you know, another very good revenue year for E-Trade, how should investors think about your operating leverage in that type of environment? Can you discuss a little bit how you're thinking about the trade-off between generating more operating leverage versus reinvesting that excess revenue back into the business?
Oh, sure. I mean, I hope over the past, you know, 16 months or so that folks are beginning to realize that, you know, this is quite a disciplined management team in terms of setting an operating margin and going after it and hitting it. Right. If there are areas that we need to focus on to reinvest in the business, we are going to continue to live within the operating margin framework that we've set out. So that's the way we approach all of these discussions. So that's why when we talk about what happens as a result of some of the bottom line growth that we anticipate, given some of the recent changes, that we expect that to fall directly to the bottom line. So what I'd like to see longer term is obviously expansion in the operating margin. If there are reasons to invest in the business, the folks who are asking for those dollars are going to need to show the executive team here where the growth and revenue is coming from, and that that investment is worth the investment that we're making in order to, you know, benefit our shareholders go forward. And that's just, it's the way we approach everything, Connor, here.
That's helpful. Thanks. And then appreciate your comments on Pro E-Trade being very helpful in driving your growth. I'd just be curious what type of feedback you're hearing from the customers that you're winning this platform, and then how important a driver when you win those customers is the price point, and, you know, does that feed into your overall thoughts on the relationship between pricing and customer acquisition?
Yeah, what I've seen on that front in terms of the E-Trade Pro platform, it's the package, right? It's the overall platform itself with a pretty nice experience that customers are able to get and drive with the tools that we have on that. And then it's the, you know, the customer service side, so our active trader sales and service team that is there with the people it's offered to. And there's the 30 trade per quarter, which is obviously not a hyperactive trader. We've talked about, you know, a lot of this. And that we've seen the most expansion in. So I think people like the idea that they get additional value for an increased number of trades. You know, we've seen some of that obviously hit our commission per trade line on the CPT that Mike talked about. And, you know, we like the adoption and the uptick that we've seen in the platform. So far, you know, so good in terms of bringing new customers on and also helping to educate some of our customers about using, you know, more active strategies on their accounts. So it's all in so far, win-win. More to see in 18 as we put some more power behind it, and we have a full year of it being rolled out.
Thanks for taking my question.
Sure, Connor.
Our next question comes from the line of Michael Cyprys with Morgan Stanley. Your line is open. Please proceed.
Hi, good evening. Thanks for taking the question. Just on distribution and partnerships is what the question revolves around here. We've seen a number in the industry, others in the industry, begin to partner with technology and platform companies. Just curious your perspective on that. Is that something of interest to E-Trade? And just curious how you see the nature of distribution evolving over the next, say, 3 to 5 years and the role that large platform technology companies could have either as a partner to acquire new customers, to access your existing customers, or potential role of them being a disruptor or a competitor to your business?
I mean, look, the technology is moving in a way that, you know, is fairly amazing to watch every day. And one of the things that we look at here is really getting back to our roots and, you know, getting in on the innovation side. So reestablishing, you know, internally what we have as E-Trade Labs and looking at the new technologies that are out there and how we can apply them and how they may be helpful for our customers, whether interacting, you know, with us through chat, through voice, you know, through some of the other things that are now becoming commonplace. You know, that's the things that we're looking at. If that's a build on our own, a joint venture or a partnership go forward, or looking at other ways to acquire customers through partnerships with third parties, you know, we'll absolutely take a look at all of that. We're not going to move away from, you know, our ethos of being sort of a self-directed, you know, online brokerage platform. But if there are other technologies that, you know, that Labs comes back with or that our product guys want us to, you know, go and take a look at, as long as it fits within, you know, E-Trade and, you know, the ethos we have, that's where we'll be. I mean, we've always been technology forward. We've always been a financial technology company first, and we absolutely plan to do that.
Okay. And then just on the customer experience, you touched upon that earlier. Just wondering if you could elaborate a bit on that more in terms of what's on your to-do list in terms of improving the overall customer experience. Maybe you could speak to some of the technology enhancements that that you're thinking about.
Yeah, you know, in terms of technology enhancements or customer service, what I really get back to are the easy things, right? The customer wins that you should be able to have on a daily basis, because you have a great group of customer service individuals who deal with your customers every day and who talk to you about, you know, pain points, and they have to help customers through, whether it be with, you know, with tax, finding tax documentation, uploading documentation to our system, ease of navigation around the website, making sure that, you know, all of our interactions with you are seamless, so that you have the same type of interaction across your mobile, your tablet, your, you know, desktop, if you're still in that mode. I mean, that's really where, what it comes down to. So those are some of the easy wins that we talk about here. And it's a constant to-do list, you know, that we have. So it's ever-changing. But we've had some nice wins, and we've been able to lower some of our call volumes, which allows us to help customers with, you know, real issues they have around trading or around needing help.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Brian Bedell with Deutsche Bank. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Great. Thanks. Good evening, folks.
Maybe
just go back to the back to the Capital One deal on the accretion assumptions. I think Mike, you mentioned they're fairly conservative assumptions. Can you talk about to what extent do you think you can improve the trade per account of about four times, and then just to think about the incremental margin, operating margin on these accounts when you actually you get that converted, if you can get some color on that.
Yeah, so you know, the looking at the number of trades per account, you know, we are fairly very conservative in terms of the accretion number and our ability to improve that. We're putting an enhanced platform in front of the customer. They will have access to new features, new investment vehicles that they don't have today. We think that's worth something in the short run, but in the 2019 numbers, we are very extremely conservative in terms of the revenue side. Most of this is just taking the top line revenue that the accounts are generating on our platform. We make a modest investment in service, a modest investment in technology for the number of accounts that we're taking. That sets sort of the expense base. And then overall, you come away with the type of accretion that's shown both on the cash balance and on the trades. In terms of the customer base, you know, we're very optimistic. These are investment style customers who are building wealth over time. We think it in terms of our new sort of investment continuum of products, our robo advisor, that we can position our products into these customers very well, grow wallet share over time, engage with them, show them, you know, use our education offerings to deliver education that should increase the number of trades over time. And I think that's why we're very optimistic about the long run potential that really stretches beyond the accretion or the ROIC type levels that we were talking about into really the long run value creation that a deal like this can drive.
Great, that's great color. And then just on trading in general, you mentioned, I think Carl, you mentioned on the potential for more options, you know, more work on the options side and offering the futures products. Can you just comment on whether your plans on offering Bitcoin futures trading and how you see the progress of that coming through 1Q? And I think your competitor, you know, Ameritrade, mentioned the sort of surge in cryptocurrency, blockchain, and cannabis stocks trading in the last couple months. Wondering if you're seeing the same type of development in your darts.
No, and thank you for that. So we do have both, you know, the CBOE and CME products available on our site, and you know, those have both been launched. We were very careful in particular about the types of clients and the types of individuals that we, you know, that we let have the opportunity to trade those and to get involved. And it's really around, you know, setting risk and margin requirements proactively and making sure that you're reviewing them daily. I mean, you don't want to let just any customer or sort of a new retail trader get into some of those products, particularly on the futures side. And, you know, we're being very thoughtful about it so that you have to have an existing funded futures account to have those available to you. Talking in general about securities on, you know, blockchain or blockchain-named stocks and the cannabis trade, I mean, the cannabis trade for us obviously represents a new type of market high, which is interesting. But when you look at crypto and cannabis, the volumes have been up big. In January, as we said, you know, to date, we're looking at about 315,000, you know, darts, and about 9% of those, on average, has been crypto and cannabis related, or blockchain and cannabis related, more appropriately. So that's sort of both sides of the coin. Those are obviously available to trade. There has been some high volume, but on the futures side, it's just not a material offering or product for us, and there has not been material adoption or uptake in either one of those yet.
Right. And in terms of the product, I'm sorry, the technology offering, the ramp up in the first quarter, on that side, is there greater traction that you expect, or greater rollout of technology that you expect over the next quarter or so?
Yeah, I think we're in a stage, and I said it in the prepared remarks, and just to elaborate, we are always in a state of constant, you know, evolution in terms of how we get our customers more. Right, more of what they're looking for. So we are constantly updating, upgrading, and, you know, new production roles going in to add new features and make sure the functionality and tools are there, and listening to what do those derivatives traders, the more active set, what do they need? What don't we have in front of them that's helpful? What are they going elsewhere to use? And that's a constant update and upgrade, and that's what we've been rolling out, and we've been having some great response and keeping those customers, you know, engaged, and more importantly, engaged in staying with E-Trade. So that's really the theory here is constant improvement. I don't think it's one thing that's going to roll out that's going to change the game, but there are multiple things that our product folks and our sales folks are helping us work through that are helpful for our customers interacting with us.
Great. Thanks very much.
Sure.
Our next question comes from the line of Doug Muirder with SunTrust. Your line is open. Please proceed.
Hi, good evening. Two questions. First question, I just noticed in your statistics and in your press release, you had the attrition rate on your brokerage account, unless I'm reading it wrong, it seemed to tick up, fairly significant tick up sequentially. I don't know if there is seasonality associated in the fourth quarter with higher customer churn, or is that a sign that just the environment's just getting more competitive, especially with the seems to be pretty frothy trading activity from you and your competitors.
Yeah, it's not so much the competitiveness. There are a lot of things that move through the attrition rate. It's affected also by activity that's coming from our stock plan business as customers in that area, you know, activate. We see a good bit of movement. It also is just an environment where you have a lot more interest in the market. So you see more accounts, applications come in, and then you see a bit more early stage attrition. When we look through the data in terms of, you know, the customers we're engaging with, high quality relationships, we're very happy with the overall level of attrition that we see. It's really just a symptom of the market environment overall in terms of just the volatility that it's driving to elevate the attrition a bit.
Thanks. My follow-up and my final question on the corporate services, you talk about your $14 billion pipeline. That's very encouraging. And from what I understand, that is just the plan assets that aren't necessarily migrated, and with the majority may not migrate after vesting because they want to buy a boat or a house or something. And you talk about your conversion rate a lot. So could you maybe talk about the current trend in that conversion rate from the pipeline to actual accounts? Is that improving or flat, declining? And is there anything in the works? I mean, you've talked about the TCA initiative and stuff. Do you feel fairly confident that you could increase the conversion rate on that pipeline over the next year or two?
So yes, I wouldn't call it conversion rate. I would call it retention rate of the assets that come in from that pipeline, right? That vest in the account or become exercisable and are exercised by the plan participant, who then becomes, you know, an E-Trade retail brokerage customer. So it's really providing that individual with the right suite of products or services, because we can get in front of these customers a little bit sooner, a little bit earlier. So I am very confident in terms of the group of individuals and the product set that we now have available in our arsenal. And I think once we get TCA closed and get the right RIAs identified to put in front of some of these people, I think we can, you know, improve that retention rate from 15%. And if you started staying at 15% of the assets that should come on us, increasing it by a percentage point or two is meaningful. So that's really what we're driving at. We've talked about this business for a very long time. We just haven't been, and I don't mean the stock plan business, I mean the retail brokerage account that results from the stock plan participant. And we just haven't been able to crack that code. And I think we finally have a set of products to see if, you know, we can make something happen here. Can we turn E-Trade into something more than just the plan administrator and into that company that you want to interact with to talk about your finances? So that I mean, more to come, and we'll absolutely continue to report on this go forward this year.
Okay, thanks. That's all my questions.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Chris Harris with Wells Fargo. Your line is open. Please proceed.
So when you guys are making decisions on either M&A or investment spend, how does the risk of further industry price cuts enter into your decision-making? Is it just setting higher ROIC targets for yourselves, or is the sort of is it a little bit more nuanced than that? Thanks.
Whenever we look at any acquisition, we stress test all of the variables. So, you know, we will stress and look at commission levels. We will stress and look at attrition rates. We'll stress and look at, you know, conversion issues or other items. We do a full risk analysis in terms of the profile of the acquisition and look really to see what we can achieve in terms of the ROIC and other metrics and base case accretion and how that accretion holds up under various outcomes. So it's a fairly robust framework that we look at as we evaluate these things. We think today's acquisition is going to provide great value.
Yeah, and on the Cap One deal, what level of customer attrition are you guys assuming in your 6-cent accretion number?
Yeah, we modeled the attrition rate to be consistent with a transaction like this, which is essentially an account scrape. When a customer is moving from one platform and one brand to another platform and another brand, we modeled it overall with a fairly conservative assumption around that type of transaction, and then continued attrition on essentially a closed block of accounts from there.
Our next question comes from the line of Devin Ryan with JMP Securities. Your line is open. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good evening, Carl, Mike. How are you guys?
Hey, Devin. Good, thank you.
Maybe one here just on retail engagement. You know, obviously, darts have been great, and we've seen kind of the acceleration and engagement into January. And so maybe just want to dig in on that a little bit and, you know, whether you're seeing a widening out of the types of clients participating, you know, just trying to think about is it more clients? Is it, you know, newer clients being more active? Is it just more active trading? So any perspective there would be helpful. And then, you know, just to, kind of a follow-up on that, you know, was there any connection in December with the strong account openings to the Bitcoin futures launch?
So the first question, I would say D, all of the above. It hit on all, you know, hits on all cylinders at the present time. We are absolutely seeing first-time entrants coming into the marketplace with, you know, new accounts and having account values that are a little lower than, you know, our average account sizes. So we absolutely have, you know, new accounts being opened by first-time participants. And we can also see that, you know, in some of the call volumes and some of the questions that we receive. So absolutely new participants. We are seeing a lot of engagement from our existing customers, particularly those, you know, more active traders. They've become even more active. And then you've seen the margin book grow and sort of flex up as investor confidence continues. So it is really firing on all cylinders at the current time. I think as to the second part of the question, you know, CBOE and CME products that we have out there, we've actually seen very limited uptake. Now, we didn't launch those to our entire customer base, right? We just wouldn't do that. It's not safe for the customer. It's not safe for us. You really have to know what you're doing if you're going to engage in, you know, Bitcoin-related futures. We built out the risk framework around it. We made sure we had the right margin requirements against it. and we've talked to clients who are looking or going into that product. From that set that we've opened it up to, we've still seen very limited trading activity and very limited engagement, immaterial.
Okay, great. And just a follow-up here, just quickly on the tax rate, so, 27%. It seems maybe a bit on the high end. I know you're in kind of high tax states, but are there any things you can do to think about getting that down over time to try to gauge maybe how conservative that is from a longer-term perspective? And then I'm assuming that does not include any other potential impacts from stock-based comp accounting or anything else like that.
No, I mean, you'll still see volatility for the stock-based comp and then revaluation of state deferred tax assets based on apportionment each year. The 27% is really the 21% base. It's the addition of really the state levels, which are consistent really with the state levels prior, and then it's really the loss of the deduction for FDIC expense and executive comp that sort of rolls up to that overall level. Obviously we will do our best, to try and get the rate lower. But as sort of a domestic based business in the business that we're in, it's rolled up to 27% now.
Got it. Okay. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Devin.
Our next question comes from the line of Jeremy Campbell with Barclays. Your line is open. Please proceed.
Hey, thanks. And I know you guys keep running the business as if it's going to be independent, and the deals haven't been that large, but now you have, the 2Q TCA close, the 3Q, Cap 1 close. And you guys kind of alluded to perhaps some more kind of opportunistic ways to deploy capital in the coming quarters. I guess with now closing times getting closer and closer toward the end of next year, does M&A like this that seems maybe a bit more like nice financial transactions rather than bigger strategic augmentations, at all really reduce the board's optionality and preclude, exploring strategic alternatives like a sale?
So the easy answer to that one, and I'll give you a lot more than that, but the easy answer to that one is nothing would ever preclude the board's strategic optionality to make a decision to pursue strategic alternatives for this company. We have taken our board through these acquisitions. They are extremely supportive of the acquisitions. One of them was obviously a diversification of revenue play and gives us some tools to go after a segment of the marketplace that we just lose to because we don't have it. So we can't maintain those cash or those assets because they just leave us. So having a very simple and a somewhat attractive custody platform allows us to maintain some of those assets that otherwise trade away from us. When you look at what we did today, we acquired a group or in the process of acquiring a group of accounts that we think can be very valuable. Each of those transactions, if you take a look at the way that we put them into the company and the way that they would be integrated, would also be highly valuable to any shareholder who holds this company, whether it be the present group of shareholders or a new group through a transaction or other activity. Personally, and as a management team, we're extremely proud of what we've accomplished over the last 16 months in terms of what we've been able to deliver for our shareholders, both in terms of overall returns and in terms of a company that we've grown in value quite significantly. We think both of these transactions are additive, and they're absolutely not in any way preclusive of a board, me being on the board, making a decision that we should seek another strategy or another alternative. It's just not the case. So very pleased with where we are. I think these acquisitions are great for the company long-term, regardless of who the holder of the company is. And we continue to strive toward our growth goals. Neither of these deals will be counted toward the completion of those growth goals, nor will they be distracting to us completing those growth goals, as I hope you guys have started to see. It's a pretty dedicated management team, pretty dedicated company, and very focused on hitting what we laid out 16 months ago. So I think we're in a very good place. I like both of these deals, and I think, whoever the ultimate shareholders are of this company, they're going to like them too.
Great. Thanks a lot, guys.
You got it.
At this time, I will turn the call back over to Mr. Rosner for any concluding remarks.
Thank you all for joining us for the quarter. We look forward to talking to you in a couple of months, and have a good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines.